This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We know that many public radio listeners start the day with the news on Morning Edition and end the day with the fake news on The Daily Show and The Colbert Report. Today, we salute our colleagues on the fake side of journalism. The Daily Show with Jon Stewart just launched a new website with about 13,000 video clips spanning the show's history, giving us all a chance to catch up on moments we missed. Here's a clip from earlier this week when Jon Stewart commented on a recent speech by General Ricardo Sanchez, who commanded the coalition forces in Iraq from 2003 to 2004. In that speech, the general said, "We're facing a nightmare with no end in sight."
Sir, if your estimate was so dim so early on, why didn't you tell us this back then? Why didn't you tell us then?
The last thing that you want is for currently serving general officers to stand up against our political leadership.
Really? That's the last thing you want? Let's look at Sanchez's hierarchy of bad things. The worst thing ever? Standing up to political leadership. And that's preferable to, what's the phrase?
A nightmare with no end in sight.
Look for more of these tremendous insights in Ricardo Sanchez's new book, I Have Difficulty Judging the Worstness of Things.
To find out what goes on behind the scenes at The Daily Show, I spoke with Ben Carlin. He joined the show as head writer in 1999, shortly after Jon Stewart became the anchor. Carlin became the executive producer and co-created The Colbert Report. He left both shows at the end of last year. When I spoke with him in April 2006, I asked him to describe the premise of Nate Cordry's Daily Show report on how Vice President Cheney shot his friend Harry Whittington in the face during a hunting trip.
It was really one of those things where, as more details came out, you kind of realized the story was a red herring, because what was most scandalous about the story, in our opinion, as we read reports, was not, you know, what happened between Cheney and Whittington, but actually the fact that the vice president goes on these particular kinds of hunts. The more details were revealed, kind of like deep into the stories as we were reading them, we're just like, wait a second, people go and shoot like 70 caged birds and they're right there and then they're just released. That's not hunting. And we just couldn't get our heads around like what thinking about hunting as this, you know, pursuit which is involved with, has some skill, and you have to go out and you're in the brush all day and you know it's cold and you're up at the crack of dawn and all these ideas that you have about hunting. And we just kind of said, like, this here is really the scandal of this story, that this thing goes on. And is any way, this is the most furthest thing removed from hunting you can possibly imagine. So we said, like, let's actually try to do, this is the closest to, I think, actual journalism. We really go right up to that point. And so we tried to find a place that would let us come on and do one of these hunts.
Well, let's hear the opening of this piece, and then we'll talk more about how you put it together. So here's Nate Cordry on The Daily Show.
When the vice president went on a private hunting trip last month, he took a lot of heat for shooting his friend. But the truth is, he's actually a crack shot who's downed as many as 70 pheasant in a single day. And he's done it on canned hunts, where birds are raised to be shot. I wanted to hunt pheasant like the vice president, so I made a reservation at the Tobacco Stick Hunting Preserve in North Carolina.
We release birds per order of the customer, and the customer is able to go to the field and hunt for these birds.
It's like regular hunting, but with a menu.
Quail are $7 each.
Okay.
The chucker is $13 each. The pheasant is $16. And we use pointing dogs for $75 each.
Can I shoot the dog?
That'd be a very serious issue to shoot the dog.
So I can't shoot?
Can't shoot the dog.
I was pretty sure that the vice president would get to shoot the dog, but 140 pheasant would have to quench my bird lust. But would my $1,000 ensure this was better than regular hunting?
Well, here, the birds are in the field for you and know they're there. It's a sure thing. The birds are here. And on a wild bird hunt, you may find birds and you may not find birds.
And who really has time to hunt and track prey anymore?
It's a sure thing.
One thing I've always hated about hunting, it's a challenge.
So that's an excerpt from The Daily Show of a Nate Cordry report. My guest is Ben Carlin. He's an executive producer of the show, former head writer of the show, been with the show for 8 years. So Ben, explain a little bit more what goes on at this ranch and how the birds are actually shot by the people who've paid to hunt there.
I mean, they're basically kept in a coop, and you walk up and you look at what they have to offer in terms of the menu, and you pick out the amount of birds you want to shoot. And what they do is they take the birds in a crate and they put them in the back of a truck. They drive you and the birds in the back of the truck. So it's like this awkward, you know, dead bird walking moment where you drive to the field. You're in the front seat. The birds are in the back. The guides, if you can call them that, will then take the crates, go out into the brush. They will then dump the bird upside down so it's disoriented into the thicket. Okay, you will then get in position, and then the guide will nudge the bird, like roust it basically, and it will, you know, being confused and disoriented, it will attempt to fly, and it flies up and you shoot it. So the one, like, nanosecond of freedom that this animal, you know, experiences in its life is the nanosecond before it dies. That's what the vice president does. We literally could not believe it. We sat there in the editing room and we could not believe that people do this. Because truthfully, you know, I went to school in Wisconsin. My roommate was a hunter. I very much like the idea. I don't hunt myself, but I like the idea of it's, you know, deer season and you go out. His dad was actually a bow hunter and would go out every year and bag a couple deer. And I don't have any kind of ethical problem with that at all. This to me seems like very cheating.
How did you get permission from this hunting ranch to shoot there? Did they know what you were really up to? Do they know Daily Show?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think when you go and say we want to do a profile of, you know, your operation, you don't necessarily have to say, and oh, by the way, we're going to belittle it. We don't need to necessarily offer that kind of disclosure. We don't lie about what we're doing and who we are, but we also don't necessarily say, here is the jokes that we're going to tell at your expense. So it's kind of a balance, but we always are truthful to the degree that we don't deny, you know, where we work and who we are and what we're doing.
But with the questions that Nate Cordry asked, they have to assume that either he's a satirist or he's learning disabled.
Yes. Yeah, but I got to tell you, more often than not, it's learning disabled. It's not, you know, people don't, especially when you get into a world that is, you know, fairly esoteric and not necessarily one that's drenched in a lot of exposure to the media or in a media center like New York. I don't think that there's necessarily that same skepticism that what's this person's angle necessarily. You know, we do a fairly good job, better now than we used to, of trying as much as possible to put the onus of stupidity and creepiness on our people, mm-hmm. and not we don't want to make anyone look bad unless they're doing something really horrible. And in this case, these people that we were interviewing weren't, I wouldn't say the perpetrators. They were just people that were working there. So we just kind of used them to kind of get the information out and to kind of make some points in general.
I know another thing that you often do on The Daily Show is take clips from past interviews or past press conferences that completely contradict what that same person has just said and play them back to back. So you take a current clip of somebody in the news, often somebody in the Bush administration, and juxtapose that with a clip of them saying exactly the opposite thing weeks or months ago. And I'll play an example of that. And this is, I think this is called Bush versus Bush. And it's President Bush from the time when he was governor and campaigning for the presidency, juxtaposed with what President Bush has said about Iraq. So let's hear a short clip of this.
Mr. President, you won the coin toss. The first question will go to you. Why is the United States of America using its power to change governments in foreign countries?
We must stand up for our security and for the permanent rights and the hopes of mankind. The United States of America will make that stand.
Well, certainly that represents a bold new doctrine in foreign policy, Mr. President. Governor Bush, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm not so sure the role of the United States is to go around the world and say this is the way it's got to be.
All right, well, that's interesting. That's a difference of opinion, and certainly that's what this country is about, differences of opinion. Mr. President, let me just get specific. Why are we in Iraq?
We will be changing the regime of Iraq for the good of the Iraqi people.
Governor, then I'd like to hear your response on that.
If we're an arrogant nation, they'll resent us. But I think one way for us to end up being viewed as the ugly American is for us to go around the world saying, we do it this way, so should you.
Well, that's an excellent point. I don't think you can argue with that. Mr. President, is the idea to just build a new country that we like better?
We will tear down the apparatus of terror, and we will help you to build a new Iraq that is prosperous and free. I don't think our troops ought to be used for what's called nation building.
Well, that's fair enough, Governor.
It's an excerpt from The Daily Show. My guest is Ben Carlin, who is an executive producer and former head writer of the show. So Ben, do you remember how the sketch was written and what the process was like of finding the juxtaposed footage of the president?
Yeah. I mean, again, most things start with kind of just a concept or an idea. And this was kind of born out of this idea that everyone is saying so-and-so is a flip-flopper or this person is not consistent, or and that's a label that people always tried, especially in last couple elections that people put on. That was a very strong tactic that Republicans used against Democrats. And we always, you know, believed that you are it's very difficult to be 100% consistent all the time, especially when cameras are always going to be on you. You're always going to be caught one way or the other. And we felt very strongly that Bush had kind of gotten this relatively free ride on this whole idea that he himself hadn't changed positions pretty radically on several things. So the idea then becomes to find the best examples to animate that. The challenge there, more than anything, is to try to make them funny. You know, before you want to make a point, but you got to really be very careful not to kind of dip into being super didactic.
Now, you've said that there are things in which where you think that the straight press has given a free ride to people in the administration or in Congress. How do you see the role of The Daily Show as a kind of adjunct to the press?
By definition, we exist as a reaction to the press in terms of commenting off of what they are doing or what they're not doing. But as far as like a defined role, we really try not to get into that too much, only because of the desire and the need to just produce something funny every day, and the kind of what it means or what are we doing exactly doesn't really come into it like that philosophically, I would have to say. When you study it, or not study it, but when you look back and say, oh, this was this or this was that, then you kind of can say, oh, well, we were actually being a commentator in the same way that an editorial cartoon would be a comment on the day's news. But I don't think we necessarily ever start a meeting by saying, okay, well, here's what the press is doing, here's what they're not doing, let's do this. That just can't enter into our process, just mainly because of efficiency. It just wouldn't work to add that added level of mission.
Ben Carlin is the former executive producer of The Daily Show and The Colbert Report. More fake news coming up after a break. This is Fresh Air.